When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every single episode.
Blood.
Why would you do it again? Oh my gosh.
Oh man.
Here we are just trying to...
Pre-episode, Ben was doing some mic checks and I was trying to think of the opposite of his jovial, jingly nature over there.
Ethan almost certainly left it in as a cold open.
Absolutely, almost, he
yeah,
did.
Now they've heard you say blood unexpectedly twice.
Maybe you should put the cold open after this part now because it'll have ruined the opening joke.
testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Ba-da-da.
Blood. I was just trying to say something really jarring.
That was jarring. Yeah, I knew it. Blood. Why blood? What's blood in the mind?
You were just in such a happy testing jingle. Like, what would be the opposite of this?
Blood. Man. All right, you ready?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to not breathe in super deep because when I do, I usually like... No, I got you.
The off-kilterness. So I was, you know, we already moved past it. You and me as bros, it was a hilarious inside joke from 10 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah.
And then I thought, you know what? Let's bring it back.
Let's bring it around again.
It's never too late.
Oh, man. Last week I had to give blood, and it's not something I'm good at all.
Never given blood.
Never, not once?
Nope.
What?
Yeah.
How on earth have you made it this long in life?
I mean, I've had to like give blood for like blood samples to be like tested at the doctor, but not like I haven't like donated blood just for like being a good person, which now that I'm saying it as I'm like, maybe I should be donating blood more. Well, I don't even know my blood type.
I don't know my blood type either, but I will say for the record that I was not giving blood like to the Red Cross, which I agree is probably something I should or could do more of.
Yeah. I've never bled.
It's like when I fall and scrape myself on a sidewalk, you want to know what happens? Literally nothing. There's no skin.
I've never even fell. I'm mistake free.
Why fall? Oh my gosh. Could you imagine making it? Like, I wonder if there's like a record, you know, like whatever, you know, watchers of the universe that are like looking on at us mortals.
Yeah.
Are like, this kid has made it to age 7 without falling.
This kid hasn't spilled one drop of blood. It is unprecedented.
It's like literally there must be a record held by someone.
Yeah.
Who unbeknownst to themselves, like nobody keeps track of this.
Yeah,
thing.
Like how could you prove it? Like this is the first time I'm bleeding. I promise. Like yeah, sure.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
It's like, all right.
You made it to age 12 before ever getting a cut.
I don't think so.
It seems unlikely. I have
3 boys and they can barely make it 10 minutes. You know.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
That's not true. They're not that violent.
But anyway, so I was gonna say it was really kind of funny and interesting because I I do have a lot of nerves. So I was giving like a blood sample for like medical reasons or whatever.
Yeah, okay, sure.
So it was just like one of those things where like a blood draw. But they did have to take like 4 vials worth, you know?
Oh my
so
God.
It felt like a lot.
Yeah.
But I am not good at it. Mm-hmm. And it's like one of these things like where I do look at, I'm not even like that nervous about it going to do it, like knowing that I need to do it.
Yeah.
Like it's like I'm aware of the fact that my physiological reaction to this activity could possibly make me pass out.
Right.
Which it's never officially done before. Like I've never actually like lost consciousness, but I can get like really pale, like, you know, kind of break out in like a cold sweat, like very like lightheaded. And I have had to like walk down a hallway and like sit on the floor because I was like that, like head spun by it.
I do remember on one particular occasion we were in Vermont and we were fishing onto the boat.
I knew you were going
to
tell this story.
Well, I mean, I have to, you know, it's my job as your older brother, Ben.
Yep. Go ahead. Go ahead and remind me.
Something happened and all of a sudden just a fish hook ended up in Ben's finger hand.
So I caught a fish and I was taking the hook off and, I think that I didn't have enough line, like pulled out from my rod. And so when the fish kind of like lurched, it just like I didn't even move my hand a lot, but it was just enough to the hand that was holding it, one of the hooks that had not caught the fish got stuck in my finger. So then I had the hook in my finger and the other end of the like treble hooks, which is like the three prong hook things on like a fishing lure, was still stuck in the fish. And so I had this like kind of moment of panic that like I was gonna not be able to get the fish, like the hook free from the fish, and the fish was going to continue to move and like jerk the hook around inside of my hand.
Right.
Which now that I'm saying it out loud, it's like I feel pretty like this was an okay thing to be like a little bit, you know.
I mean, it's certainly, yeah, you don't want that to happen by any means.
Yeah, but
your body's reaction was to go completely rigid and start falling towards the edge of the boat.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I would say on this particular occasion, I did pass out. Like, I mean, I lost consciousness inside of the situation. And it was the same kind of sensation where I was like, you know, very pale, very sweaty, very like faint, quite literally. But, you know, it's also one of those things. And I feel like I've become very aware of it with Addison, where it's like I feel like growing up, like fishing was something we do with their dad fairly frequently. And I feel like the emphasis that he had on the way that fish hooks are shaped, in the way that there's like the reverse facing barb on it, it's sort of like, it's very unideal, so to speak, to have one stuck inside of your person,
right?
Because what they are intended to do is be hard to get out,
right?
And so like,
once it's in the fish's mouth, then it'll get caught before they can spit it out.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that, like, you know, as a kid, it was such a big warning, and I think it was something that I was so fearful of happening, like from such a young age, that like it was almost like the 5-year-old version of me that was taught the lesson not to get a hook stuck in yourself. It was like all of the fear of the 5-year-old was being like selected and transplanted into like my, like, you know, 19-year-old human body.
Right. Yeah.
And so it was just like one of these things where it was like, I couldn't even told you that this was something I was like bothered by. Like even talking about it now, I'm not like uncomfortable talking about it.
Are you sure? Okay. You need to sit down.
I am sitting
You're
down.
You're already sitting down.
Yeah, I'm fine. So anyway, that did happen. And I've wondered about this before. And so it's like the weird thing about it. And I actually think it'll mesh up nicely that you chose that particular example. So I went to go like do the blood thing, and I walked in, and you know, like I'm chatting with like the phlebotomist, and you know, she's just like explaining to me like, you know, how long she's been doing it and like all this type of stuff. Cause my big play is to like talk so much that I don't pay attention to like, you know, kind of like what's happening or whatever. Yeah. And so, you know, I told her just straight up, I was like, I'm not super great with blood, so I just want to like, you know, like let you know in advance. You know, and so I was like, so if I'm like looking away or like not at my arm or anything, or like, you know, the blood in the tubes or anything, it's because it's like, I'm not good with it. So I was just trying to like prepare her in advance. And so like, you know, I just have my arm over to the side. I'm like looking to the left, and the whole thing happens. And I was like, and she's like, and you're done. And I was like, no way.
Yeah.
I was like, I did it.
Yes.
And I feel fine.
Well done, self.
I'm okay.
Yay.
You know, and I don't doubt that if I had looked at it, that it would have cause the issue.
Yeah.
However, I didn't, and I was fine. And what was really interesting about it, though, was this exact same day, Alice was at work, and her sister, Sammy, was going through, and they were like changing mannequins to like do outfits for like social media posts for the website.
Okay.
And in the process of doing it, she was like going to take like a dress off of like this mannequin, and as she like pulled it off, I don't know if she like hit like a piece on the mannequin or like a zipper on the dress or something, but she like sliced her finger open.
Oh no.
And you know, it was like one of these weird things where I was like, I literally just like, I faced my like my fear, you know, like I did it, like, and I was okay. And then like Alice is like telling me about this like vicious scrape that Sammy endured that like was bad enough that like Sammy like needed to like leave, and she didn't need stitches or anything, but she did need to like leave to go home and like, you know, clean it up and everything, because it was like not fixable, you know, there in the shop.
Sure.
And as they're explaining this story to me, I'm growing faint.
Oh no.
And I'm like, what the heck, man? Like, it's like this same day I dealt with this problem, like, and I was fine.
My own blood came out of me, no problem. I'm hearing a secondhand account of someone else's blood leaving them.
Yes. And
how many people are you endangering right now with this story?
I know. I literally, as I was telling the story, I was like, there's somebody who's like, I can't, I'm turning it off. And now they won't even know that I see them and I hear them and I understand them because they already turned off the episode. So my apologies. If you know somebody who did that, be sure to let them know that I did offer my condolences. But so I keep trying to think about it, because I'm like, is it the needle? Is it the blood? Is it like the pain? And it's like when I got my tattoo, for example, you know, it was like I had a needle to my arm causing pain for 5 straight hours.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like, and that didn't bother me at all. I had no issues whatsoever.
It's really the blood.
But it might be. But like at the same rate, it's like one of these things, like where if I were to like fall and like scrape my leg or my knee.
Right.
Although even now that I'm giving this example, I know for a fact that it's not true, because there's another example that you were there for where this same thing almost happened.
That was way worse. I know exactly what you're talking about. And that was like down to the bone.
Yeah, you could see like white underneath there.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about it. I know. Yeah, this is really good. This is really good. Has anybody stuck around this far? But so I'm trying to think if it's possibly the other thing is that there's also veins involved inside of this whole ecosystem. And then there's your hands. And I feel like hands are like a vulnerable and important piece of your body. And I think the idea of like something bad happening to them is like something that like really worries me.
Oh my gosh. I remember, did you watch Squid Game?
I never did, no.
Oh my gosh, what? You haven't watched Squid Game?
Was it good?
That was a rhetorical question. I was just going to remind you of a scene.
Oh, okay.
Okay, really, the whole show, yes, absolutely go watch it. It's amazing. It's so good. But there was one scene where it was like, I saw one scene in it, and anyone who's watching will know where something happens to someone's hand. And I was like, okay, if this is a level of gore we're going to have for the rest of the show, I don't know. But that was like, It wasn't like there's plenty of death on screen because it's Squid Game and, you know, only one can survive or whatever.
Sure. But these are all things as I know.
People are dying left and right. But none of that was as bad as what happens to the one guy's hand. And I was like, oh, if they're going to keep having shots like that, I don't know about this. But that was just like the one extreme example in the whole show. And it was fine after that. But it like made me like fearful. I was like, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
I swear, I feel like sometimes this is a thing with shows where they like they want to like test your resolve very early on, or else it's like, you know, I don't like horror movies, for example. Yeah. So mm-hmm. like anything that makes me like deeply upset or like worried or scared or something, it's like, it's not really something that usually like jives with me in a way that like I'll probably really be able to like bite into it and consume and be like a part of it. I just don't enjoy it. But I like, sometimes I wonder if like in pilots of new shows or like episode one of a new show, a lot of times they will include something that's like really intense and violent.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you trying to like weed people out, or is this like a hook for some people where it's kind of like, oh, this is the kind of show we got going on.
Well, this was like in the third episode, so you were pretty in at this point.
You're pretty in. Know? Okay. That's a good point.
No doubt about it. Yeah. So I don't know about that. But, you know what? On the note of horror movies.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So we are in the season of Halloween at the moment. Like, it's, you know, it's coming up in the near enough future that they've started running trailers for horror movies that'll be coming out around Halloween.
Yep.
Let me tell you what I cannot stand is trailers for horror movies. Like, because, like, yesterday, you know, we're all sitting in the living room and I'm just watching like the Washington Commanders game, you know, with me and Luke and Nick and Nate and Beth. And like two different occasions throughout it, it's just like, and we'll be back after a 30-second break. And it's like cut to horror movie trailer. And it's like immediately just like boom, like so like just such like scary image. And I'm like, whoa, like, you know, fortunately the kids happened to be immediately distracted, but had they not been, it was just like, it'd been like, that would have been terrifying for them.
Really? Then you're subjecting them to like witnessing this thing, like with no mention. Yeah,
right.
But like otherwise there's nothing wrong with like your kids watching
like football or sports. Yeah. Like that's fine. It's like hard cut into horror movie. And I was like, whoa, this is so annoying. I hate when they do it in, even when I'm at the theater or whatever, like if you go to like around this time of year, you know, if you go to a kid's movie, not going to be a problem, but if you go to like a PG or PG-13 movie or something, like you're going to be watching stuff and they're just going to be like, hey, guess what? Here's some horror movies for you. And you're like, yeah. I'm not here seeing a horror movie, so I don't need to be advertised to for this thing that I'm not interested in. Thank you for your creepy trailer. Great.
I know. Yeah. But then there's also the toss up. I mean, it's a good point. Cause it's like, no, you know, there's nothing less effective than an advertisement that is falling on like, you know, deaf ears. Like, yeah. It's just sort of like, this is not the person. Is that even the phrase? I don't even know if it was. I like went with it as if that was like a thing to say. Is deft a word?
D-E-F-T? Deft is a word.
Okay. Anyway, my bad. So I don't know if that was the right way to use that or not. But, okay. But like having an advertisement go out to somebody who has absolutely like no intention whatsoever. It's like that's like the worst mismatch. But then at the same rate, like the more personalized advertisements are growing or becoming is also like one of these things where it's like really uncomfortable for different reasons.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, this knows me too well. Like, did it hear me talking about that? Like, what's going on? So it's like, this is a better ad for you. And we know that it's a better ad for you because data, but also it's like, well, that feels invasive all of a sudden.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't know about this.
So maybe you should like, you know, it's like every time you see a commercial for something like that means nothing to you whatsoever. It's like, cool.
Yeah. I love the sometimes when you download an app these days, like they are now required to like prompt you with like, can like allow app to track your activity or whatever.
Oh, yes.
I always click no.
Yeah, right, right.
But, like
right.
Some apps have gotten really like crafty about it and they've like set up several screens in advance and it's like you're about to be prompted with this question. In order to better serve you and make sure you have a more tailored experience that in, you know,
right.
You know, yep. They're like, make sure you click this button and it's like, oh, sneaky app, listen to you try to pitch me on why this is better. No.
No way. I'm not doing it.
No way. No tracking. Thanks not. Or even, I think most websites are now like required to be like accept cookies and you have to like accept them and I'm always like, nope. And then sometimes if like, if there's not an option to like deselect them or something, sometimes it's like you must accept all cookies and I'm like, well then I'm just leaving, see ya.
I do that all the time.
I can live without this information.
It's like, oh, I'll find it somewhere else.
Yep, never mind.
I can deal with this. Yeah, no, I agree with you. Interestingly though, I feel like we've just now touched on a couple of things that may fit nicely into a topic that I have sort of slated for today, specifically with the horror movies, because I think that I'll see if I can structure this narrative in a way that makes sense. But the rough premise, the rough idea here is like, very frequently horror movies would go incredibly differently if the characters inside of the movie just had cell service.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, this is a big problem for horror movies.
Yes, yeah. It's like it's almost always like the ability to communicate changes the dynamic of the environment so drastically that like if the like directors, writers, whatever, don't account for showing you the scene where it's like, oh, no bars. You know, unfortunately, yeah. We don't have the ability to call help here. It's such an obvious like loophole, plot hole problem. It's like, right. It's like if they're like locked in the shed or something, why not just call somebody with their cell phone that's in their hand? It's like, oh no, okay, see, we've seen it. Yes, now. I can't.
All this paranormal activity is affecting my cell service and such.
Right, but so what it really speaks to, though, in my mind, is the overall importance of the ability to communicate.
No doubt.
And how much that changes everything. And so one of the things that I was thinking about and chatting a little bit with you and Ethan, the editor, this morning, was the concept of like the fact that we are currently living through the advent of the interweb. Mm-hmm. So think about like society as a horror movie. And before the advent of the internet, we didn't have service. And now we do have service.
Right.
And so it's sort of like, it's like, to me, it's like, it's a goofy way to illustrate the example, but it's like, that is how much more capable we are at doing anything on a global scale now.
Right.
That like 50 years ago was not available. That right. was the no bars situation.
Right. And like you're just waiting on a letter in the mail or like a physical phone call from a landline.
Yeah, exactly.
A fax machine.
Right, right. And to be fair, I mean, it's not like, and I think you could probably make the point a couple of times over, like, because there's also like the advent of like the WordPress, which then allowed for like newspapers. Oh, yeah. and newspapers themselves were just a much, much, much more prominent form of communicating information on a global scale prior to, you know, prior to the internet, like, and, yeah, and people just paid more attention to newspapers then because there was no internet as like a more efficient.
Oh yeah. Version. Right. Like imagine the only way you got news from the neighboring town is someone literally came physically to the town and could just tell you things that were happening there. If they knew what was up and if their information was accurate, and it's just like, this is how we get information.
Exactly. Yeah. But so that's sort of like one of the things that like I personally think that like, I keep coming back to this conclusion. I'm like, maybe what I should have done or studied in school is just like anthropology, like, you know, the study of humanity, mm-hmm, or societies or, yeah, whatever. But so the big one is, the big question I had written down in my horror movie example with was like, do all aliens have the internet? And the answer is that probably not all aliens, not all other intelligent life that must exist out there somewhere necessarily has the internet. But there is a really interesting plot point in the book Project Hail Mary.
Okay, yeah.
That basically just is like humanity itself is attempting to solve a problem in space, and they arrive at the location of the problem, and big spoiler warning in case you're reading the book or have any intention of doing so, quiet pause, we're waiting, you've had enough time to click away. Basically what they discover at the location of the problem is another form of intelligent life also there at the same time trying to solve the same problem.
Right.
And one of the big things that that you know, our intelligent life with their intelligent life have a conversation about is like, what are the odds of us being here at exactly the same time?
Right.
And the conclusion is that it's utterly inevitable. Right. Because they are two societies that were closely matched enough that like the expanse of all universe is so absolutely massive, but being impacted by the same problem means that either certain planets, certain intelligent life may just be able to solve it from their home planet. Other intelligent life may not be able to solve it at all and therefore can't arrive on scene. And therefore, what you're left with is two intelligent life species that are able to arrive at the same location to solve the same problem.
Right, because they are at the same level of technological advancement.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
So it's like, what, like there is no other time where they would have both arrived because the problem is happening now.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Which I that was like one of those like explanations where I'm like reading the book and I was like,
yeah, like, well, like, yeah, it's so true. Yeah, like, man, goodness.
Like my mind just exploded.
Yeah.
Anyway, all that's to say though, to continue along my path, my narrative here is sort of like, I'm so curious to know if you were to ever have, you know, like 20,000 years from now or something like that, where there's the grand gathering of all intelligent life in the universe at some type of Colosseum, yeah, type.
Galaxy Con.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Galaxy Con.
You think they have a bouncing castle?
They almost certainly do. I imagine it literally as like the in Star Wars where like Palpatine is like elected, whatever he's elected at in the prequels. Yeah, right. That's what I imagine.
Supreme Chancellor.
Yeah. Like where you've got like this big area and everybody's like, you know, from all their different like worlds and stuff. And like they're like little pod looking in. Yeah,
got the little floating disc things.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I suspect is that like if you're to go through and look at all of these species or you know, forms of intelligent life or whatever, that have all converged into the same location. The process of being able to all converge on that same location suggests that every single one of those has been able to create at least similar enough technology to be able to be a part of the meeting and therefore if we as humans are there in the first place, all of those places have also likely created the internet, which means all of those planets all respectively have their own timelines and development of technology wherein you can observe, I bet, consistent behaviors across mass populations with the advent of whatever version the internet is for every single planet.
Yeah, like whenever a civilization, basically what we're saying is that any given intelligent species after eventually they are, everyone is barreling towards the internet at some point, and eventually they'll get their own version of it. And after they do, what happens next is almost predictable.
It's almost predictable. Yeah, exactly. Like we're following what is probably like a fairly common set of events, because with enough data, like, you know, there has to be trends that are fairly consistent. And what does the dispersion of information ultimately do for planets?
Right.
And in my personal opinion, the dispersion of information is a good thing. And therefore, it's like the advent of the internet must be a good thing. But we're still in, you know, the first 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 30 years. We're still within the first 30 years of it. So what I am like, what I am so curious about is like first 100 years of internet in an advanced civilization. What does it do to the overall planet?
Oh, I'm surprised you think the internet's going to look the same in 100 years. I don't know
that I think it will look the same. And I think that our behaviors with the internet will continue to look different. One of the points I feel like I made in like one of the earlier episodes of The Pop is the question as to whether or not a portion of human advancement isn't the inevitability of optionally choosing to not use all of the technology that is available to you.
Right.
It basically as like a, like, yes, there is the ability to have more technology. However, what we have discovered is that we as humans are happier with less of it. And I think probably that's where technological advancement would inevitably plateau, mm-hmm. because there is like less push for more advancement because we've kind of like reached like the threshold.
We've done it. We've gone as far as we can go.
As far as we can go, probably until the next big step.
Right.
You know, because there are plateaus in all technological advancement at some point in time.
Right. I know. I'm like, people, this is like one of those things where I feel like I keep thinking about like AI stuff recently. And I think Hank Green just had like a TikTok where he's like, I don't think I'm like angry guy yells at lawn about the AI stuff. And, you know, it's like all, you know, these are the problems I'm seeing. And I'm like, what's interesting about it to me is that like when you hear people talk about it, it feels like what they're afraid of is humans at the top using AI to replace all of the people beneath them and then like benefiting greatly from the AI. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds bad. We don't want that to happen. But like, I feel like whenever people conceptualize it, it's like the problem is still that there's someone at the top pulling the levers. And I'm like, the real problem is going to be when it's not people pulling the levers at all, you know?
right.
Like you're afraid there's some human who's going to use the AI to like stop having to use other people because they could just have the machines do it for them. And it's like, what happens when the machines realize they can just use the machines to do the stuff for them? Like that, and they're like, you know, it's like you don't want like a situation where someone is like, I don't need any more writers or directors or films, or I don't even need people on set anymore. I can just have the AI to write the entire script, generate the entire finished project in itself, and just send that to the movie theater. Like, that's great. That, you know, like that I don't even need actors. I can computer generate everything, whole thing, their voices, nothing is needed. It can do literally everything and do it way faster. And people will come and see that movie. And it's like, that would be a bummer if that sort of thing starts to happen, and who's to say whether or not it will. But what would be even worse is if it's not even a person deciding that. If it's just a machine being like, well, I can just make movies, and so I will just do that, and then people will come see it, and then I, the machine, will make money, and then I, the machine, will use those resources to do other things. And it's like, that's the real danger, or potential danger, I suppose, that I feel like people are always, it feels like people are afraid of people abusing the machines. I'm like, guys, it's not the people are going to do that, but what's going to be worse is if the machines abuse themselves.
The real question though, because I mean, the one of the big things that hinges on a little bit as well is like the assumption that like if AI technology can become sentient enough to the point where it's making decisions of its own accord, like if eventually AI is like, hey, these engineers that we're working with, they're not fast enough. I'm just going to create AI Corp and I will file for, you know, a limited liability company, and I will start my own organization where I will have my AI engineers creating and developing tech that I can then, you know, grow and build and do things with and so on and so forth.
Right.
The idea, the catch there is like the assumption that AI wants what we as humans want.
And that is true too. You're right. Like there is sort of those sort of things, but it's like, I don't know. It's like those are like the limitations I feel like you put up in your brain that like, oh yeah, they wouldn't. No, but machines would have no reason to want that. Machines can't want. And it's like, yeah, but machines couldn't write or do music or anything or things like, you know, like last week. And
sure. So like, you know, the it does feel like the it does feel like there's a version of exponential growth involved with it, where it's almost like, you know, once the it's like the Fibonacci sequence. It's like, it's sort of like, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, 2 + 2 = 4, 4 + 4 = 8, 8 + 8 = 16, you know, and it's sort of like those numbers are all still small and manageable enough, but like it does not take long for like, you know, what, 32, 64, 128, 256,
yeah,
you know, 512. And it's sort of like all of a sudden it's like, whoo, okay. It only took a small handful of moments before that there was zeros at the end of this, you know.
I don't think that's the Fibonacci sequence, but
is that not right?
I think it's like 1 + 1 = 2, and then 2 + 1 = 3, and 3 + 2 = 5, 5 + 3 = 8.
Oh, maybe you're right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. What am I? There's a different word for whatever compounding I was just describing. But I think you are correct.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Just so yeah.
No, good save, good save.
All the comments.
Yeah, everybody's like, oh man.
Actually, all right. If you already left the comment, you now have to leave another comment saying, I'm sorry.
They caught it. They caught
those
it.
Those are the rules. Those are the rules. I don't make them. I just make them.
No, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Hey, nailed it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it also feels like probably we've reached the end of our rope for the amount of intelligence that we have and our ability to predict the future of AI. So it seems like a good spot for a transition.
Blood. Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paper clip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see, but you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a
fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, Jay, okay, I'm excited about a note you have here in the show notes for the day. It's called The Chocolate Explosion.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's
please,
what happened.
Please tell me this is a positive chocolate explosion.
Well, you know, Ben, it's a practice in spin is what you have to do here.
Oh, dear. I mean, okay.
Yesterday, Beth was off. She was running a half marathon up at Virginia Tech doing the Hokie half, which she did great at. Woo, congratulations. They ran a 201. Flying, did a really great job in her preparations for her Richmond Marathon later this year. But anyway, I was at home and I was making pancakes for the boys, as nice. I like to do on the weekend.
Love it.
You know, good times. And Luke was requesting, I think, some like chocolate chips or something for his pancakes, which already had chocolate chips in them, or maybe he wanted sprinkles. I don't know.
Okay.
We're having a real sugary pancake here. So anyway, I'm going and I'm looking for them in the pantry, and we have like this little tub that has like all of the baking supplies in it, and I can see them, and I reach past it, and as I'm bringing my arm back, the container gets caught on a box, or like the little container of Hershey's cocoa powder.
Okay.
Are you familiar with it? Like the little brown one, it's got like a brown lid on
it. Yeah, I know the exact
one. Yeah, it's a real flimsy lid. And it got caught on the side of the basket, and the top just popped off, and the whole thing flipped upside down inside my pantry.
Oh, no.
And, oh, my gosh, dude. It was like, I don't know if you can imagine, listener, my pantry at home, it has got wire rack shelves. So lots of little openings. And then this was probably the fourth shelf up. So like each shelf has got like a Tupperware, like big plastic Rubbermaid container style looking thing that has got like the various sorted kitchen materials in it all, and like on its way down. I mean, I cannot tell you how everywhere this chocolate got. Like, it landed, I mean, it goes through all four wire racks, it lands in this giant bag on the floor, on its way down, it gets in every single container, every single, like, object on the entire right side of the pantry is now, like, covered in chocolate dust.
Oh my gosh.
It was like, it was this like minor little thing that happened in like 1 second, and all of a sudden it's like, I was so close to, because it's like fall is upon us, and I've been looking forward to it so much, but it has come with like some version of allergies, which is like I'm just adjusting to at the moment. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice or anything, but I was like one step away from handing Luke the sprinkles and being like, all right, boys, I'm going to go take a shower real quick, which I just wanted to go stand in the steam, you know, get out of here. It's been bothering me for like 2 hours now. I'm like, I'm so close. Here we go. This is the last thing I have to do. No. Chocolate explosion.
Oh, my gosh.
And the problem with chocolate is, especially this particular chocolate powder, is that you go and try and like wipe it. It's like, I don't even know how to clean it up, because you try and get like wipe it with like water, it just turns into chocolate.
It's like chocolate sauce.
It's just chocolate sauce now. And you try to like wipe it away, and it's like, now there's more brown. You're like, no, this can't be what's happening right now. And it's on everything. Like, there's clumps of it just in every single bucket. I had to clean out the entire, I mean, I ended up cleaning out the entire pantry because I finished like the first half of it. And as I'm going through, you know, I'm like, I may as well just get the other half. But I had to like hand wash every single like object in the pantry, which was a good purge, by the way. There were some things like, well, this is expired. This is gone.
Oh my gosh. The number of times you go through like your pantry and you're like, well, this expired in 2019.
Yeah, okay.
Like, we renovated our kitchen since then. Why does this get put back?
How is this here?
That means we intentionally put it back in the new cabinet.
I know. Sometimes, like, even here at the office, I know that when we moved to this office from the old office, I know there was like a particular jar of peanut butter that I just like wrote on that was like, this is Jonathan's peanut butter. Nobody touch it or else seriously don't do it. Like, it's like this very sloppy handwriting. And that peanut butter is like, well, since it's expiration date. And every time I pick it up, I'm like, I should just throw this away. But I'm like, no, it's funny that I wrote this on here and I want someone to discover it and be like, why is this peanut butter so important? I'm like, this joke is going to land. I'm still holding out.
I'm putting it back. I'm
putting it back for holding on to it. Now I've ruined it. Now
I know. I was going to say, I'm going to pop into the office and be like, you mind if I make some toast?
Like, is that my peanut butter? I don't think so.
Only if you want salmonella.
Yeah. Oh man. It was just, I don't even know if I necessarily have a point. I just wanted to tell the story because I couldn't believe the amount at which it got everywhere. Like, there couldn't have been a worse object to spill because it just like balloons out. It clouds up everything. And like, the more I clean it, I'm like, this, everything in this pan, it was like the kind of problem where if like, I have to take care of it right now too, because it's like, if I let it sit, if I let the kids get in here, if I let them walk across the floor, which of course it's also completely over, like, it's going to begin a terrible process where like, if it gets on their hands and then they like get even the tiniest bit damp, it is going to, and they touch anything, like the whole house is not, like, one tiny spill in the back corner of my pantry is threatening to cover my entire house in brown smears for until we move.
Like your own private little chocolate pandemic.
It's exactly like, what it was.
Like,
it was like,
it's like, if it gets anywhere, it will be everywhere.
It's exactly what it was. And it was like, I cannot believe the magnitude of this problem right now, which feels like it shouldn't be that big a deal. But like, and it's like, as I'm doing it, like, Nick and Nate are watching Bluey and Luke is kind of like off to himself. He eventually like tried to start helping me a little bit, which was super nice of him. But also it was like, you're not really, you're just sort of, you don't understand the full scope of the problem. So the part you're attacking is like, I'm just going to have to clean that up again anyway. But thank you for your help.
Yeah, in the meantime. I think that it must be it makes you wonder how many times in life that you like thought you were helping mom and dad.
Yeah.
But, and like in reality, it was sort of like, we're going to have to go back and redo this afterwards.
Redo this anyway. So the good news is that at this point, my entire pantry is completely reorganized and looks amazing and beautiful, which is great news for me. But like, I think that's really what it was for me. It was that like this tiny problem turned into this the way it scaled up and its potential disaster, if not handled right this second, was like, it ballooned up so fast. And it was just like, oh boy, this could be the worst. And I could be dealing with this minor accident, which has no physical consequences, but could be like, this could create like a decade-long mess, you know?
Right. Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean? It's like you'll get most of it. You'll get most of it. Or you'll get used to some of it, you know? But there'll be that like one random brown smear on the wall that just dried on there and you ran out of, you know, you didn't notice it on the day of, and now it's been 2 weeks and you're like, that's from the, okay, I'll come back and get that. But then you never do because it just sort of starts blending in. It's like, I mean, I was like, the amount of anger I felt, it took me like 2 hours too to clean up. Like, it was not like a quick fix.
Oh my gosh. You know,
it was terrible.
No, I mean, anyway, you're absolutely right though. I mean, like just this past, week or two, Alice has been looking at like a couple of new rugs and she just opened like a home side to like the nude business. So there's like a lot of like really cool, like home goods that are like sort of coming through the door and stuff. And so she's like found something she liked or whatever, like a rug. We've got like this area that's like Addie's play area. And once upon a time we bought a rug for it and it didn't actually fit the space, but it was one of those things where like, Yeah, well, we have a newborn and we brought it home and it's here now. And that's just it. It was just sort of like, well, we're just going to leave it. It's fine. Yeah. Like, you know, it's kind of like it doesn't really fit, but also we're not doing anything about this. So right. That's like, whatever. But so anyway, she found this new, like, you know, this, someone brought in like a rug that was really cool and had like some neat history and stuff to it. So, she brings it home and, you know, a couple weekends ago, we're going through and like, we're pulling everything up. And in the process of doing so, you know, we lift up the old rug, to which there's just like a million, like Christmas tree pine needles.
Oh, really?
Like, everywhere. And it's like, you know, Allie and I are looking at each other and it's like, when we put our stuff away, it's like, we're like, we cleaned hard that day.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's not like we like just like left it as if this like, yeah, wasn't going to be like something that would like bother us. And it's like, how are there this many needles left? Like, cause it's like at some point in time, that means that day we broke down the Christmas tree. We absolutely had like all the vacuum cleaners out. We would have been like doing, you know, running over it and running over it and running over it and trying to like make sure it was all like back to normal. And clearly we did not do it well enough, but, right, but like in my head, I cannot reconcile a situation where we walked away from how much mess was very clearly still left underneath, right, this rug.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how does this even happen?
How does it even happen?
Is it like breeding down here?
Oh, you know, man. Like, yeah, it's like, is it expanding? Is this even from last year? How many years of pine needles is this?
I know. It's like, yeah, because at some point in time we even bought what is it called? Like a fake tree, just a, yeah, fake Christmas tree.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it shouldn't drop needles. It's like, so and I can't remember if we used it last year or not. I think we bought one last year. I think we bought a real Christmas tree last year.
Yeah, I think so. I think you,
yeah,
were there.
Yeah, I think we were there for that one. So anyway, but like that thought was going through my mind too. I'm like, it can't be from that long ago because we were using a not real tree for a while.
Right.
And anyway, so it was like, oh my gosh, how did this even? But so I really, all I'm just trying to say is I can completely relate to your chocolate dilemma. It's like, if, yeah, you didn't clean it up, chances are, I bet there's still some of it that shows up.
Well, that was the other thing. It was like, not only do I need to clean this up now, it's like, I can't even like part it like, it's not like I can partially clean this up and just be like, it's okay, I have some chocolate got in here. Because it's like, at any given moment in the future, if a child gets their hands suddenly covered in the chocolate dust, like the problem continues to persist.
Yes.
You know, it's like, this is a clean it up all now, or else it will come back to bite you.
This is where you wish you could just call it 2319 in, you know, yeah, and just, right, have, you know,
just like get in here, close it down, shut it off.
Right. Yeah. It's like, let's get some big fans blowing, some air filters, mm-hmm, plastic wrap the walls, hazmat suits. That's what you need.
All gone.
All right.
All gone.
Transition.
Were you ever the first person at school?
The first person? Like at the whole school?
Well, no, just in your classroom. Like, ooh, it was just you and the teacher there waiting for the other kids.
I would say so very rarely. There, I remember my senior year of high school cross country, we actually did morning runs, like Monday, Wednesday, Friday before school.
Okay.
Like where the team would, you know, like get there early and we, yeah, would go and run and like shower in like the school showers and stuff.
Oh, I never used the school showers even once.
Oh man. Yeah. It was like one of those things like where I think all of us sort of, it really was like, there was a massive barrier for everybody. And I think it was kind of like, we're either going to do this or we're going to not do it. And it's like, we need to, it's like, best case scenario is we do these runs, but if we do these runs, we got to use the showers. And,
right,
you know, it's just like one of those things. And you just sort of had to grit your teeth. And I think all of us were sort of like, it's worth it. Like, let's go, we'll do it together. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah, it'll, you know, but, it definitely, I feel like we had to have like some big group think going on a little bit where it was, right, like, we're all on the same page about how we're doing this. Right.
Right.
Good. We're, right, all gonna, like, you know, code of conduct.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But I would say that's probably the only instance that I can think of where I would have gotten to school like that much more early than the rest of the school. And for the most part, I was getting there, you know, like at 6:50 in the morning, and we would run for, you know, like starting at 7 for 30 minutes. And then realistically, at that point in time, the school was pretty full.
Yeah.
So I don't think, I would say very, very, very few occasions. Is, yeah, this something you experienced frequently?
I remember just like as a kid, like elementary school, like, you know, I would, you know, we just get there whenever mom dropped us off. And I'd always like think like, oh man, I wonder like someone must be getting here. Someone's the first kid there,
right,
every day. And I remember always like wanting to be the first kid there.
You,
like,
wanted this.
Yeah. Well, it was just like one of those, like, what would it be like? What would it, you know, it felt like a little bit special to be the first one there. Like, no one else is here yet. Woo.
Oh man, I don't know.
Not that exciting or anything. And it was never, I don't think I ever voiced this ever, that like this was like a, you know, maybe it'd be so cool to be first, because it's, you know, it's not really that hard to accomplish if your, you know, parents wanted to provide you such an experience or anything,
right? Like if you asked your parent, I want to be first.
Well, let me tell you who wanted to be first. I think it did happen to me once that I, for some reason, either like mom needed to be at the school for something or had to be at work like extra early, and I was like, we're dropping you off, and I remember being the first one there, and it was like a glorious like 3 minutes or something, you know, before the next kid gets there.
Right.
Yeah. I want to say it was in second grade, but anyway, Luke, on the other hand, has said like he wants to be the first one there a couple of times.
Interesting.
I know, and I was like, well, you know, which for me is like, well, if you want to be the first one there, we got to make sure in the morning we are ready to go, you know, like we can do it. You know, you just gotta, we gotta, as soon as you get up, you know, you gotta like get dressed and get your shoes on and eat your breakfast and stuff, because we gotta do all that and then get in the car, and we can, you know, we'll just get there early, and that's as, you know, as good as we can do. But so,
do you get like first dibs at toys or something?
I don't know.
Like there must be like something like a power play here.
I don't know. Maybe the power play is just that, like, you knowing you're the first one there.
Well,
and there's sometimes I feel like kids can make a game out of anything, or a competition. It's just like, yeah, I got here first, so I win.
Right.
Like,
yeah. It's like
no one else was even really playing, but
but I was the one.
Yeah.
But no, I actually do. I sort of understand this. Like I am, I think I've talked about this before, but like, typically, my best case scenario, I don't like to be late for things, but like I also do not want to be early for things. Like to me, I feel like being early, I usually then like lament the amount of time that I have now subjected myself to, like losing productivity or just like waiting for everybody else to arrive.
Uh-huh.
And so, but also then I have a respect for the fact that other people have to wait for me if I'm then late. So I can respect the fact that I don't want people to have to wait for me. However, I guess on the flip end of things, I also don't want to have to like lose that time in the meantime either. The exception to this is like whenever we stay, like we go on like a family trip,
yeah,
like the beach house, for example, this year. I think Alice and I were the last family, Alice, Addie, and I were the last family to arrive. So like your family, mom and dad, and our younger brother Tyler's family had all gotten there first, and not by like a huge margin. Like everybody was still like unpacking and everything.
Yeah.
But like there is a weird situation that happens like where I like to get there, like go and get like the layout of the rooms before people have like put their stuff down in rooms and everything, kind of like a feel for like where all the stuff goes, what the layout of the kitchen is. Like, you know, it makes me feel like prepared for the week, because once you get there and everybody else is there and stuff has started to be put down, it's like, well, I don't want to go into like Jay and Beth's bedroom.
Right.
Like now it feels like an invasion of like, not that you guys have done anything other than set bags down, but it's like once it has been established as someone's room, it's like, well, now I shouldn't go in there because that's like an invasion of like their privacy or something. Like I don't want to be in their room for any reason other than something that they've like specifically asked me.
Right. Like if you're the first people there, you can literally walk around and go in every single room. Whereas if you're the last people there, you might not set foot in every room.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Yep. And even then like learning in the kitchen, like, and it's like, where's like the silverware, where are the glasses?
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, I think like when I find them on my own, I have like a perfect memory for it. And it's sort of like, yeah, where's the silverware? It's like that drawer, you know, it's like, I know exactly where it is. But then like, if you have to ask everybody, because everybody else has already learned it, it's like, you don't go and explore and open the drawers and see like what's inside of everything.
Yeah.
You instead are sort of like, where's the silverware drawer? And it's like, it, you know, like then they tell you, but then you don't know like where the large spoon drawer is.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, now throughout the rest of the week, it's like, I feel like I'm like having to like figure out everything I could have learned in the first 15 minutes if I could have just gone through an empty space and just pulled every single drawer out,
right,
and looked at what's inside of everything.
Yeah.
And self-catalog. So anyway, that is like the one instance where it's like, I feel like I want to be the first one at the house so that I can like learn the house, mm-hmm, and all the essential like things that I need to know about the house.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise, That'd be like my one stipulation.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
But Luke likes to be there first.
Well, I mean, today was the first day where it was like really like on the table.
Okay.
Like I brought it up to him a few times. Like if you want to get ready, you know, if you want to be there first, we got to leave early. But like no matter what, it's like we still end up getting there at about the same time. And it's like, oh, well, better luck next time.
Right.
But on this particular, on the morning of this morning, it was like, I don't know, it's like 4 a.m. and Nick started crying, and then he woke up Nate, so I had to go check on both of them. And then while I was in their room, Luke got up and got in our bed, and then when I came back, it was like, oh, now I've got this squirmy toddler kicking me in the back. It's like, I'm like, I'll try and fall back asleep, but it's not looking good. And then at like 5 o'clock, I'm like, you know what? I set the coffee timer to go off at 5. So I'm getting up.
Oh my gosh. So
I went downstairs and then I was just like watching TV for a little bit. And Luke comes down at like 6, which is pretty good because it means he has time to like sort of like wake up and like watch TV for a minute and like not be like immediately like, you got to eat breakfast. We got to get dressed. We got to go.
Right.
So we like watched a couple episodes of Bluey and then I got him his breakfast, which was ham sandwiches with mustard, ketchup, and ranch dressing.
Okay.
I know. I'm like, if you say so, whatever, just eat it. I don't, if that's what you want and you're going to eat it, which he did, good for you. But then I was, you know, I got through it. I managed to pack all the lunch and I got all my stuff packed and I got all his stuff in the car. And I'm like, Luke, we could do it. We could like, if you get dressed right now, like we can just go, we can be first right now. We can do it. And he was just like, okay. And so he got all the stuff on and we were like out the door, like nice and early, like way earlier than usual. Like, you know, gonna get there. I'm like, dude, this is it. We're there. We did it. And I get there and there's like a line of like 6 cars or something in front of us. They haven't even unlocked the doors yet. You know, we're sitting in line waiting for them to unlock the doors. I'm like, Luke, we did it. Congratulations. You know, but then I see all the, I'm like realizing that they haven't opened the doors yet. And I see all these buses pulling up and I'm like, oh, I wonder if they like, if they let the bus kids go in right away and they don't unlock the front doors or they're like, all the kids are having to sit on the bus over there. It seems so unfair that I couldn't beat the bus kids on a technicality. Ugh. You know, now I'm getting competitive with the two. I'm like, I'm going to be so annoyed if the bus kids get to go in first. Like, that is so, man, how are other kids supposed to get there first? That's not fair.
Right. It's like, don't they know this is a very real serious game?
I know. Like, what if my kid's not on the bus that gets here first? What am I supposed to do about that? You know?
Right.
And then it's like, I just chose to live in the wrong spot for this particular game.
Gonna have to move.
We're moving. That's it.
We're moving.
Yeah. But so he gets it. I don't know if he was the first one in or not, but what, like, I think typically I've been arriving like around the 7:30 mark or so. And like, I'm always like rushing there. I'm always feel like I'm so late or whatever. And by the time they finally open the doors and Luke's able to get out the car, it's like 7:27 or something.
Okay.
So I'm like, it honestly, in a weird way, it made me feel like a lot better about all the other drop-offs I've done.
Oh, interesting.
Where it's like, oh, you know what? I've been feeling like we've been getting here late, which is to say inside of the window. So not late, but like, I always feel like, oh, but we just barely made it or something, which we didn't. We've been totally fine the whole time. But it made me realize that, like, I've been thinking that, like, they've been letting kids get dropped off for, like, you know, 15 minutes and we're just finally getting here or something.
Sure.
Like, no, we've been getting here about 2 minutes later than this anyway. So it has not really made a huge difference. But what also occurred to me is that I think the bell rings at like 7:40. And if they're unlocking the doors at 7:27, it's like they're expecting the entire school population to arrive inside of like 13 minutes.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah.
What? How is this?
It's a very intense 13 minutes of
time. It's an intense 13 minutes. And it's like, but that must be the case because that's what happens. And it must actually happen every single day. And I'm like, that is kind of crazy that like, because they set this little window, it's like I don't know how many families send their kids to the school, but every single person has to be up and ready and to get their kids here inside of this like little window of time.
It is
every single day.
When you like, put it like that, yeah, it is incredibly interesting.
Yeah,
like, I always think about this like when you go and like make plans to go and do an activity, and it's sort of like if you run into somebody you know at that activity, you're like, oh, what a coincidence that like we're here at this place at this time together at the same time.
Hey.
But also, whenever you go and do an activity, literally every single one of the other people that are already there, whether you know them or not. I always think it would be so interesting to have like spoken to any of those people and be like, yeah, like on Saturday the 17th, I'm going to be there at 6 p.m. They're like, me too.
Right.
You know, it's like independently, even though you're all completely different people, none of whom who know each other, you have all made the plans to be in the same spot at the same time.
This baffles me sometimes if you go to a movie like 3 weeks after it's come out at like, you know, 2 p.m. or something.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, yep. Like you're going to see Barbie 3 weeks later at, you know, 1 p.m. on a Tuesday. And it's like, you walk in there and it's like, there are other people there. Other people made the exact same plans as you to see this movie at this time in this place way after it came out. Like,
right.
How? What?
But if you guys would all talk to each other, like, I always think about if, like, there's like a nearby restaurant, for example, and like, you know, you, you're like standing in line at like a Chipotle or something, because there's one near our theater, and you'd be like, you know, like if you just like happen to like overhear the people in front of you being like, yeah, we're going to see Barbie at 2. It's like, no way, we're going to see Barbie at 2. And the people behind you were like, no way, we're going to see Barbie at 2.
Right.
You know, and it's like, what is going on right
now? It's like, you're all just getting lunch before you see the movie at the place nearest to the movie theater.
Exactly.
It's
yeah.
Not it's that
like,
weird.
It's not as coincidental as you feel like it is, but it's also kind of like, oh.
But it's a little coincidental.
Right. Like you share plans with a whole bunch of people who you don't know all the time.
Yeah. Exactly. Odd. All right. So there was, what was the other half of this about Luke wants to be at school first? I had another part of it. God, my brain is like scrambling.
Did you do the thing?
I did the thing. I'm like, I had a whole other thing. I've been like holding it in my brain this whole time, and now I cannot think of at all what it was. Oh, okay. This was it. I remember.
Oh, man. We got it back. Okay, go, quickly.
I remember as a kid, not only wanting to be the first one there, but I always wondered, like, wouldn't it be like a mate? Because like almost every day at school, it was rare that the entire class was there. Like, one reason or another, one kid was on vacation or someone was sick or they got taken out for a doctor's appointment, whatever. You know, a lot of kids.
Yeah, a lot of schedules.
It never seemed like there was a complete, like, some days there was perfect attendance, but it seemed like most days at least one kid was missing, maybe two, maybe three. And, like, I remember thinking, like, wouldn't it be crazy if, like, for some reason, every other kid in my class wasn't here and I was the only one here the whole day? Like, wouldn't that be, like, wild? That'd be so cool. Like, well, I mean, first of all, it would not be cool because it almost definitely means something terrible has happened or, like, there's a big sickness going around.
Right.
But it's, like I don't know what they would do. But, like, it's also, like, just not feasible at all that, like would they just send you home? I don't know.
You're right. Like, it would be, it's like one of those things where it's like, it technically could happen at any point in time, but what are the odds of it? Like it feels like one in every million days of school attended or something, or maybe even less odds than that. But it'd be like there must be the instance where that many more students are out, or like even like, you know, like a class of 20, only five somehow show up. Like,
right,
it's
yeah.
a very rare thing to have happen for one reason or another, but it's like, it seems like statistically speaking, it should happen.
Right.
Eventually.
Someone has had this day where their 20 person class was just five for the day because everyone was sick or on vacation or something like that.
Yes.
You know, like I can see, like, it feels like, you know, maybe like the day before Christmas break or something.
Sure.
Would be a great time for something like this to happen where like a ton of families are like, nah, we're leaving a day early. Just don't worry about it. And also a lot of people could be sick right then because it's like cold weather outside. Like, feels like that could happen. Anyway, I remember thinking this was kind of funny because last year, I can't remember whether it was Nick or Nate, but one of them was sick and had to stay home from preschool, and their class is only five people big.
Okay.
And so that's 20% of the class right there. But it turns out the other three people couldn't make it either.
No
way.
And
they were the only kid in school that day.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So I thought that was really funny. I was like, man, I used to dream of that happening, and you did it in preschool, man. You got it done right away. It never happened to me.
What a glorious thing.
I know. What a glorious day for them. So, yeah, congratulations. Bravo.
It feels like there should be like a special little award or something.
I know, only one at school. Perfect attendance. Pff, survived, never took care of the rest of you guys that day.
Right,
exactly.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely killing it. Well, that's amazing. Man, okay, so to close out, I feel like there's like one last little conversation that I thought was really interesting that we're having in office last week, because I was sort of like presenting this sort of like unusual thing that I realized is like maybe started happening since podcasting, like doing the Popcorn Culture podcast.
Yeah.
And the question is doing the podcast almost therapy, like not necessarily for the listener, but like for you and I, because like a lot of times, like what we're doing is we are coming in and we are like we've clearly had something on our mind for one reason or another, like something that like either like that's like stuck in your brain or like weighing on you or this, that, or the other. And we're coming in and we're having like big discussions and we're usually like trying to like work through the concept or get to the bottom of it. So like on some level, it's like, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's like, that's in a way what therapy is. You go and you sit down and you talk for an hour and, you know, sort of try to figure out like things you can't figure out somehow, some way, which on the whole, like that part of it makes sense. But the curiosity to me was that like, I have actually found that like by regaling or reminiscing through even like positive memories, in certain instances has almost like used my ability to reminisce on that thing.
Really?
Yeah. So it's almost sort of like, it's like I've like unpacked or revisited or rehandled even like positive memories in a way that is like so thorough that like my brain, like even if it can like remember the specific instance that I've talked about, it's almost like, yeah, but you know, like I already used my reminiscence of that memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was cool to go back and reminisce about it, but it's almost like my brain like is sort of like able to like check it off and like send it off into the distance. And it's like, I feel like I even like remember the memory less now.
Wow. Which, interesting.
Yeah. And
like, so like I'm imagining like the movie Inside Out where Riley's got like her shelves of memories and your brain's just got like a whole big shelf of just like, Ben will need these one more. We'll keep them around for one more visit.
Yes, exactly.
And like yep. These are but the next time we send this up to HQ, they can just send it right into the memory dump. You know, that's it.
Right. Yep. Yeah. It's like, we'll burn it one more time. We'll go through it one last time. It's like, oh, what a cool thing. And then it's like
gone.
Yeah, then it's gone. And what's I think the reason it's like it's strange is because like the other big thing about doing the podcast and talking so much and doing all the things that we do is like a lot of times, you know, you're like trying to like go through and figure out like where you can like pull information from like your life experiences and stuff. And I feel like the further into podcast land that I've gotten, it is almost like it's like, well, I used that one already, so I can't use that as an example. Let me look over here. Oh, I use those two. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like weird because I feel like my brain is like I've gone through and through the process of like telling all these like various stories of our childhood and memories, high school, GMA, high, you know, just cross country, all the, you know, the various things. I'm like, oh, this is strange.
Right. Yeah. Like I've used all my stories. That's it.
Right. It's like, but maybe they have like a recharge time.
Maybe
it's like in, you know, like a video game, it's like you use a certain attack and it's like, it's got a recharge.
It's got a timer on it. It's coming back. It'll come back around.
A cool down time. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. A cool down time.
Yeah.
That is interesting. I do know sometimes I feel like I'll like tell, you know, I'll like something, I'll have a story and, you know, I'll, you know, get into work on whatever and I'll tell the story and it'll be like, okay, well, story's told. I've told it now. Like, that's it. I can't tell that story again.
Right.
Or something, which is like so like ridiculous. Like if I were to sit down at lunch later, I'd be like, well, what would be the point in telling you the story? Because I told it to other people later, even though that person I'm having lunch with has, you know, was not there for the story.
Was not there. Yeah. But like,
makes no difference to them. And in my mind, it's like, no, I already used it. I'm not, that would be like, it'd be like cheating to the cosmic conversation universe to use it again, to like get second use out of this.
Right. Like I can't tell a chocolate explosion story twice.
I know.
Like, you know, it's like I told it once.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I've been in 1,000 occasions where, you know, you and you know, someone else arrive at, you know, let's say we're going to a brewery or something and me and you were the first ones to get there. And, you know, you tell me a story about how this happened to you this weekend. And then it's like the next person talks. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? I was just telling Jay, and you retell the whole story. And then as that's ending, you know, two more people show up. I'm like, what's up, guys? Well, you know, I was telling these guys. And it's like, now I've lived with the story three times. This is unbelievable.
It just keeps coming back around again.
Come on, man.
I know. Well, yeah. And I think it depends on whether or not you find resolution. And so this was the example that I was giving. So I was talking about like positive memories, but there was I think the example that I was giving to the team the other day was like, I remember as a kid there was like this situation, and you actually solved this one possibly for me, maybe that's why I've been able to like fully put it to rest, but like for Christmas one year there was this remote control car, and we were in a big remote control car phase, and it was called the Speed Wrench, and I was so jazzed for the Speed Wrench, because it was like this, like it had like the controller was like an impact gun, and you could like take the wheels off and, you know, put like monster truck tires on, or like racing tires, or like just standard tires, and it's like, you know, it was like highly customizable, and I think to me it was like nothing more fun like being able to like make it my own, even though there was like really three options for what it could look like. But I remember I was super excited about it, and I was like, that's like, you know, that's like the thing I want for Christmas. And I know that I told the story on the pop, but like the thing was is that, like, you know, we got to Christmas, we're like opening our gifts or whatever, and like our little brother Tyler received the Speed Wrench like remote control car, and
right.
I remember like in the moment like looking at mom and dad and sort of being like,
are you kidding
like,
me?
No, not that. But like in my head, I was like, oh, it was a mistake. It was just like, you know, like,
yeah,
like
you'll tell him right now.
Right, yeah, like
put the tags on the wrong boxes.
Yeah, this is about to be solved. I'm not worried about it. And then of course it wasn't because they just, you know, I'm sure they just thought that it was a great gift for Tyler, which of course it was. And also like when you're three brothers, it's like, it's weird how much you think you own a thing when it's like, you have the toy in your house now. It's like, but like, I think the three of us, we were kind of specific about like, it's like, this is Jay's toy. This is Tyler's toy. These are Ben's toys.
Right.
Like not that we didn't play with like, you know, with each other stuff or with each other even, but like it did still seem like there was like the mark of ownership was like, you know, tied to each other's respective brother.
Yeah. It wasn't like you couldn't share, but it was like, you couldn't take that to your friend's house.
Yeah, exactly.
That one's Ben's.
Right.
No. Well, we're here. We're at the house. You can use it as much as you want. But like, if we were to like really draw some lines here, like I'm not letting you like take my toy to that kid's house.
You can't play with it so hard that you might break it.
Exactly. I am allowed to be upset if you break my thing, even though we're all playing with it in the exact same way, and they basically all belong to everybody.
Exactly. Yeah. Which again, now as you know, on the other end of the spectrum, as a parent, you know, I feel like it is much more obvious that it's like things for the household, like things for the kids. It's like, it's a great way to give the gift to somebody, but it's also like, now the house has it.
Yeah.
You know, like now we can all play with it.
Someone phrased it to me once, or maybe it was just in a parenting blog or so, I don't remember where, but that like, it is difficult for children to share something they have not truly possessed yet.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So
at a birthday party or something, like if, you know, you're the birthday kid and you just, you know, unbox this like amazing action figure and like you've held it for like 1 minute and your brother is like, oh my God, can I have a turn? I want to play with it. It's like, it is like, you know, you love a situation where birthday child is like, of course, here, have a turn. But it is like, it is unfair to expect them to share in that moment before they themselves who received the gift have even truly possessed it.
Like
you
know,
like they have not like really owned the gift yet. You cannot share something you do not own.
Right.
So it's like before you've owned it, it's difficult to share. So you shouldn't expect them to share 3 minutes after they have it because they haven't really owned it.
I feel like now as an adult, you'd be like going and like buying like a new car, your dream car or something, and then like someone being like, hey, I'm going on a road trip, do you mind if I borrow your car? And it's like, you mean you like you want to put the first like 500 miles on my new car I've only driven home from the dealership? Like,
yeah.
I got it yesterday. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I have like let friends use my cars for road trips before. And like, I don't mind the mileage that is added to my car.
Right.
But if it was the first 500 miles on the car,
I'd be like, you've got more experience with this car than I do.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Right. I don't really know about that, man.
You have all the experiences that I don't have yet.
Okay. I want to back up for a second though. Cause you said when like in the act of retelling a story, you think people are retelling it because they didn't get like resolution from it. And it's just like, that is like a very interesting spin on like conversational goals to me. Cause like in my mind, I'm trying to imagine a situation where I'm just like sitting around with a group of friends and like, I'm telling the story to new people. Cause I'm searching for some sort of like resolution out of the story. Like that is why I have begun talking to you, is to like help solve a problem or something. Like, I think almost at all times when I'm conversing with anyone ever, my goal is simply to entertain.
Yeah, right. like I'm going to tell you this story because I know that it is interesting,
right,
and therefore entertaining to listen to. And no, I think that's fair. I just think because I think that probably is on the same token. It's like a lot of the stuff that I have explained or talked about, you know, through the pop, I am telling the stories because I do think that they're like interesting, or like they provide like a piece of like, you know, perspective, or like, even if like you can't relate to like my speed wrench story, you might be able to relate to like a similar form of like jealousy over like a gift being given or something like that. And so I feel like that's probably like a piece of it. But like what I'm saying is that like probably like some small piece of me, like the child version of me that like felt that like that feeling of jealousy as a kid, like never unpacked it, you know, and then as a result,
well, it was given to Tyler, so
that's true. How could I have unpacked
how could
it?
You?
That's oh my God, that was hilarious. Funniest thing that happened all day.
Well, I try to entertain, you know.
Yeah, no, I. But what I mean though is that, like, you know, like there was like this lingering emotion that, like, on some level it was sort of like as an adult, I'm not still stuck on this. I'm not worried about it. Like, I've obviously, like, very clearly moved past it. Plus, for Christmas a couple years ago, you found one new in the box that you gave me for Christmas.
So I finally did
get to unpack it, which was really great. So I have it at my house. I have a speed wrench, which I'm very proud to say. But, like, I think what I found was, is that, like, by reminiscing on the story, by regaling people with the story, it actually, like, allowed me as an adult through adult lenses to fully understand things like, you know, Olaf's song from Frozen 2, like, this will all make sense when I'm older. Mm-hmm. It's like, it did all make sense when I was older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I can look back on it and, like, look at the full scope of the situation. Look at, like, the lens through mom and dad's perspective. Look at it through, like, childhood me's perspective. Like, understanding that, like, mom and dad didn't know every single thought that, like, went through my head. And it was like an unfair expectation to place on them to know, like, what this particular one toy meant to me out of all of the toys. And also recognizing that, like, mom and dad were incredibly generous with us as kids. You know, like, there's lots of amazing things that happened. So, like, even though I was stuck, even though like childhood me felt like some sense of, like, injustice again or jealousy, it was like by going back to the story, by revisiting the story, by retelling the story, it was almost like I could let go of something I didn't even know I was holding on to.
Right.
And that's what I mean by, like, therapy, because then it was sort of like, when I let go of it, my compulsion to retell the story was almost sort of like, I don't know if I really need to anymore.
Right.
You know, it's like I feel like I had something, like part of what made me feel like this story was worth telling to anybody in the first place was because people have, like, misery loves its company. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's like a, like, oh yeah, other people will know what this feeling is like, you know? But, like, that's the thing, is, like, I don't have any negative emotions tied to the memory anymore. And because of that, it's, like, ultimately freeing in some ways, which is very nice. Like, because it's sort of like you went and if mentally you have, like, little anchors tied to all these, like, little memories or whatever, it's like they can overall be weighing you down. And, like, when you go to therapy in general, what you're attempting to do is cut ties from those anchors and let those things go.
Right.
And be more at peace, be right. more okay.
Yeah. So just in being on the podcast and having, like, visited them, it's like the memories were still visible, but, like, what was tying them down was not. And, like, now that you've revisited it, it's like, oh, you know what? This is, I remember feeling this way. And as an adult, it's like, you know what? That was a silly way to feel.
Yeah. 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 And I mean, so, like,
which makes,
like,
you feel less resentment overall in general.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, precisely. And they're easy ties to cut. Like, it's like, you know, it wasn't like I had to, like, really, and that's probably the big difference, you know, like when you go to therapy, you're probably trying to cut more difficult ties to more difficult memories than,
right,
than
sure.
my really, you know, surface level one here. But as an adult, going back, revisiting the story, cutting that tie, it was dead simple. You know, it was sort of right. like, oh my God, I can let that go now. But, like, doing 200 episodes of this stuff, or coming up on 200 episodes, you know, it's like, man, I've done this with a bunch of things now.
Yeah. Not bothered by anything.
I'm not bothered by anything. But as a result, I have less to say. Maybe. Who knows? We're still talking.
We got plenty of stuff to talk about. We didn't even talk about the crystal horse on here.
I know. It seems like a good topic for next week.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway, guys, as ever, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. Tune in next week to find out all about the crystal horse. What could it be? A horse made of crystal?
Not what you think.
Or a crystal made of horse?
Crystal made of... what is this? We've unearthed crystallized horse. You know what? It's weird.
It could be. Could be. Or it could be interesting. We'll have to wait till next week to find out.
Mm-hmm.
As ever, those guys, if you would like a little bit more popcorn culture action, you can head over to patreon.com/popcornculture. Select the $5 tier to get access to After the Final Pop, an extra 15 to 20 minutes of Jay and I talking after each week's episode, covering on something that we did or did not talk about in that day's episode. Plus, you get the entire back catalog of all of the other episodes that we've ever done of After the Final Pop. So you can go and give those just a big old listen. But otherwise, until next time.
Blood.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.